Welcome to the Theater of Others podcast. My name is Adam Marple, and I'm the co-artistic director of the Theater of Others. With the COVID-19 pandemic forcing a shutdown and reevaluation of space and gathering, we at the Theater of Others are thinking about what stories we need and how best we can share them. We believe space is psychology, and it informs the way in which an audience interacts and reacts to what is presented to them. We create uniquely theatrical events in bespoke sensory performance spaces crafted to encourage curiosity and grant the audience permission to commune with the play. Now that that space has moved online, how can we encourage interaction and action amongst an audience virtually? The Theater Brothers produces plays that both welcome and challenge the audience. We are committed to international collaboration and are a laboratory that helps artists grow through intensive study of their craft. The Theater Brothers creates a shared community of artists and audiences for the purpose of exploring the most profound issues of our lives and times. We believe the play watches the audience. The audience is necessary, and they are witness to what happens. And you get to be witness to us making that happen. The purpose of this podcast is to open up our process and let you in. We're peeling back the curtain, so to speak, and encouraging you to follow along, to ponder, prod, and question, to join us and criticize us if need be. Being a witness is no passive task, and it requires much from you. Are you up for the journey? On the podcast today from Melbourne, Australia, are co-artistic directors Woody Miller and myself in Cairo, Egypt. This podcast contains explicit language.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Booty.
How you going?
I'm doing well. We started our festival.
Oh my God, you're smiling.
It's a rare occasion, I know.
It's so rare.
Yeah, God. I know.
You look young and fresh, and you're smiling, and your lip corners are really high, and eyebrows are raised.
All right, I'll stop doing that.
I don't recognize you.
Well, we've got a festival going. We've got our first play out. We've got our interview with Christina out. We're actually doing it. We've been talking about it for so long, and now we're actually doing it.
Oh, yeah, and it's pretty good. I was really moved by the work, actually.
Yeah.
So fun, huh? Working with new writers and new points of view other than ours.
Exactly. And it's one thing to obviously read it on the page, but then to actually see what they're doing with the actors and with the sound designer. Jack's doing a great job. And
he's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, he's lovely. And just hearing it actually come to life, it's really, 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 really nice because, you know, we read it and we like the play as it is. But then to see what the directors and the playwrights are doing with it is fantastic.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. And the acting is not bad at all either. I'm like, whoa.
I know, okay.
How's Fan?
Fine, I suppose. She's trying to...
Fan is fine.
Fan is fine. That's you know, it's... Every single day is an adventure for us, and she's making lots of friends, which is great because she's a friendly person.
Of course she is.
Despite my smile right now, I'm not a friendly person.
That's true. That's all very, very true.
So she's making the friends. Do it. She's making the friends, and she's out there living her best life as best
she's making the friends.
She's making the friends.
You sound like Akshay. Yeah, he's out making the friends.
Making the friends.
That's my job, too. Yeah, I make the friends.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all know that I did marry my best friend. You are the female version of my wife.
True.
My wife is the female version of you, yes.
Yeah, I'm the female version of your wife.
Yes, yes.
That is also true.
It is also true. In some ways, yes. In some ways, that's true.
Well, it is cold as a motherfucking hell. I'm so cold. Look at me. I am like bundled up. I look like it's like winter.
I bet you wish you were back in that closet.
Take it easy. Take it easy. I do not need to be back in that closet. But it was toasty in there. It was toasty.
Exactly.
But that's season one. That's season one.
Right.
You know, I'm broken out of the closet now.
Season two in the office.
I can afford a desk.
Yeah, exactly. Season three will be this attic podcast studio that you hinted at earlier.
Oh my God, it's gonna be flowers in the attic. Booty in the attic. Booty's flowers in the attic.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know if Obama's going to be able to fit up there.
He won't. He won't be able to get up there. So we won't be able to.
Yeah, I have to like push him up there. It's going to be the Diary of Booty.
Did you just make a Diary of Anne Frank joke? Really?
No.
That's too soon.
I did not make a joke.
That's too soon. Too soon.
It is too soon. One more century. We need one more century, then we can have a diary in the attic with the flowers,
exactly,
and the cavoodle.
Wow!
But you know, but this is the thing. If I had to be like trapped in the closet, I would love to be trapped in the closet with you.
Oh wow! Thank you.
And Stephen Galtney, of course.
Oh, well, of course. That'd be a pleasant situation for all of us.
Oh, my God.
Hi.
Are we in the closet now?
Are we meeting in the closet? I heard.
What?
Oh, my God.
What? Stephen's here?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I thought this was the plan, to meet in the closet.
Yay! We're in the closet together, Stephen.
Yeah. What are you doing here, guys? This is fun. It's cozy. It's warm.
It's warm, right? It's nice and warm in here.
Yeah, it's toasty. It's toasty. But there's a lot of sausage going on here. We need a woman.
We need a female presence. Yeah, in this closet.
Yeah, we need a woman of color. We need a POC.
Okay.
W.
Hello.
What?
Who's that?
Is there somebody here?
I've been hiding in the closet this whole time.
Waiting for us to introduce you.
Behind the coats.
Exactly.
Exactly. Wow.
Talk about gaslighting.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, see what I did there, boys?
Yeah. We always see what you're doing there.
Who is this person on the line with us, Adam Mappell?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, on the podcast today with Booty and myself, besides Stephen Galtney, who we've heard from before, we are we're honored and pleased and ecstatic to have Rachel Chin joining us today. Rachel is the Rachel is the playwright of Galatea, which is coming out this coming Monday, We've known Rachel since, God, when did we meet Rachel? When did you start LaSalle?
Back in the old days.
Yeah, 2014.
2014.
Yeah, crazy.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, and Rachel was a phenomenal student and a really good actress, a really, really good actress. Somebody that, you know, you played.
Diligent.
Diligent, exactly. Disciplined actor, which is always our favorite kind of actor. But toward the end, as was used to always be the case at LaSalle, you started to play around with writing and really getting involved, making your one-person show and doing that. And you have been, besides hosting and doing some acting things, you've actually been doing a lot of writing since graduating.
Mm.
And,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I tend to think of you more as a playwright now more than anything else. And that's exciting. That's really kind of exciting.
Whoa. Wow. That's amazing.
Wow.
But that goes along with what we were always saying. It's like, in this day and age, it's the artist hustle. Hustle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if you're living in Singapore, you know. You got to be able to pay that gas bill, especially if you don't want to be the barista. You know, you got to figure out a way to pay that gas bill.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you're paying your gas bill.
I am paying my gas bill. So funny story about Singapore. So after I graduated, there was a whole year where I was working my ass off, just hustling and working acting in a lot of things and like commercials and such and such. And then at the end of the year, after you leave school in Singapore, they're like, hey, when are you going to get a real job? You know, you're not going to get a visa unless you get a real job. So I was like, shit, I don't really want to go back to Malaysia. It just wasn't the scene for me. And I wanted to stay in Singapore so badly that I actually went to pay my gas bill by getting like a real job, you know?
Yeah, real person.
Oh, what's a real job? Okay. What's a real job? What's a real job?
Business development executive.
Ooh, business development executive.
I know. I like conformed with the masses. And then, like, I joined with them. I broke bread, and I was one with the masses.
Oh, God. What was that like? How'd that feel?
Soul-crushing. Soul crushing.
Massive.
I was so sad. I was really sad. So I kept doing stuff on the side. Like I was doing immersive theater that didn't require too many intensive, like day-long rehearsals. And while I was doing that.
You mean basically rehearsal?
Yeah, just rehearsal. Full stop, right? You know, any rehearsal at all, really. And then I was writing as well, but I didn't fully launch into writing until the pandemic.
Miss Rona, she'll do that to you.
Yeah. I know, like Miss Rona was the reason that like I had to continue on doing like the day job, because I was gonna quit after I got my permanent residence. So I worked for a year and I was like, that's it, I'm done. So I tendered my resignation and I was fully ready to get back into the hustle, you know, just like starve like an artist does. And then the Rona happened. And then I was like, shit. So I started writing again because, you know, theater was closed and like the whole world basically went into lockdown. And I was just seeing a lot of things happening around me. Like a lot of my expat friends were getting deported. People who didn't get their permanent residence in time kind of were getting kicked out of the country. Yeah. Their approvals for passes were just, you know, revoked, or you know, they just weren't renewed. And then I wrote a play about that, and because of the pandemic I happened to be part of a Shakespeare read on Zoom with Adam and a bunch of people from Yale, because one of the alumni from the acting community in LaSalle went to Yale to do his master's in acting. And he was like, hey, come one, come all. Everyone's free to come and join us to read Shakespeare. And I was like, all right, I don't have anything better to do. I'm in lockdown. So I spent like Saturday or Sunday mornings, like waking up at 7, 8 a.m. to come read Shakespeare. And that's how I got to know the managing director of the Yale Cabaret, to whom I pitched my script about how all these poor foreigners and immigrants were getting deported from a country that used to support them when, you know, foreigners were relevant and foreigners were bringing in like business and, you know. So I had that play go up, and then I was like, I had the adrenaline of that play running through my veins, and I was like, oh my God, I need to do something else. I need to do something else. and then I saw that TOO had the Audio New Play Festival come up.
What's TOO?
The Theater of Others.
Oh.
That's what the cool kids call us, Booty. Come on. TOO.
Yeah. You know, you go by acronyms. Shit. Yeah.
That's right. Singapore loves their acronyms. You know this.
Yes. That's true.
Singapore loves acronyms. NETS, no, that's the one thing that they don't acronym. Singapore loves acronyms. KPE, PIE, those are all expressway names. So basically, I was like, yes, Theater of Others is having a new play festival. I want to do that thing. I want to go to there.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to there.
Yeah.
I watched, like, you know, Hamlet, Stay Illusion, and I loved Hamlet. I loved that. And then I watched Limb from Limb.
Thank you.
I did love that so much. Booty was Hamlet. And then I watched Limb from Limb and I was like, this is a fun way of making a theater. So how do we make theater in a post-pandemic era? And then, of course, you need a story. And I was like, well, shit. What do we write about? Because if you don't have a story, then you have nothing, really. At an after party, my director for Galatea, Crenshaw, was talking very randomly about Pygmalion and Galatea. And I was like, you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of, like, My Fair Lady. It reminds me of that power dynamic I used to have with an ex-boyfriend. Because at the same time, things were happening in my personal life. I was finding out about someone very close to me and his relationship with his girlfriend, who, as their relationship progressed, kind of, the relationship was kind of deteriorating. And it was clear to everyone else around him, except for himself. And it's very frustrating being a person as a third party watching that happen, kind of saying, you need to get out of there. Get out. It's dangerous. And at the same time, not being able to say it to that person, because I remember being in that space. I remember being in a similar relationship where, you know, Adam mentioned gaslighting and Booty mentioned gaslighting. And I remember not wanting to talk about it to the people I cared about because I didn't want to, you know, like shame my partner or kind of make other people think poorly of my partner. And just being very protective in general of a relationship that I couldn't see was bad for me at the time. So as you do when you can't talk to the people you love, you write a play for them. So
as we do.
Wait a minute. Steven, are you writing something for the people that you love, all these violent and plays about destruction of society? Are you writing something for people you love?
I might have a different in, but you know, we all do our own thing.
All I have to say is just make sure there's not a spilt bowl of soup.
Exactly. Oh, no.
Sounds ominous.
Good callback.
Sounds so ominous. So I started writing. I pitched Galatea first, and then I sat on it for a while because I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, there must be shit tons of fans of the Theater of Others. Like, we're probably not even going to get selected, you know, just like whatever. And then
all of our fans, yeah, including you, right?
Exactly, including me, 100%. So I pitched it, and then I waited, and then when we heard back, I was like, and I started writing right away. And then I had a first draft within the week. I think within 3 days, I had a first draft, and I was like, boom, this is it. We're gonna make this right now. And then, like, my director, Crenshaw and Tushar, let's call him Dramaturg, were like, this needs work in, like, in here and here and here and here. This doesn't make sense. And I tried to, it's very hard to explain the concept of gaslighting, really. And then at the same time, I had also thrown in this delightful complication of saying, you know what? We should make this a musical. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should make this a podcast musical.
Yeah.
How hard can it be?
Right.
You know? Yeah, right. Well, you've got Crenshaw. And that boy can write a tune and he can sing a note. Okay.
That's what I thought. I looked at him and I was like, Crenshaw, you can sing. You're from musical theater in LaSalle, right? You can write a musical. And then he was like, he looked at me and he was like, are you insane? No, it is so hard to write a musical. And then I was like, how hard can it be?
For 30 minutes on a podcast, no big deal.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if everyone has heard of like 36 Questions, the musical podcast. Oh, shit, I need to look up the name, but it has Jonathan Groff and...
I'll link it in the show notes.
Woman
I'll find it.
Shelton. Yeah. Yes, her surname is Shelton. Anne? I want to say Anne or Blake. I'm so sorry. I should have remembered this.
It's
anyway,
okay.
So 36 Questions, the podcast musical. And I thought, it sounds great. And more people should do podcasts. And then Crenshaw was like, I will only do this if you do two things. If you watch Sondheim's documentary and if we get Joel Chua to come on board and write the music.
Oh, Joel.
Yeah, Joel. You know Joel? Yeah, Joel. So... Singapore is so small. Booty knows Joel.
They're all our students. The ones that are working.
Of course they are. Of course. You know, it all turns out like working actors and musicians and, you know. Anyway, so we get to the first rehearsal and we're sitting there and we're staring at the screen for the longest time thinking, okay, what now? How does the music thing work? It was so hard. I was like, we have like, what, 8 songs, 6 songs? We're going to bang this out. Bam, bam, bam. 6 days done. This is far from the case, you guys. This is far from the case.
You think?
Now I know. Now I know this is far from the case. So we sat there and we wrote and we wrote and we wrote. And finally we had one song. And we were like, oh, now we have to repeat that how many times? And then each time we came back, we wanted to change things. So I was like, oh, shit. And it kept going on and on and on. And at the same time, I was like, at some point, we probably should let Theater of Others know that the script has kind of changed in a different direction. At what point do we do that? And then, like, we had a discussion and it was agreed, okay, we will send them the demo. And that is when we will let them know. So... because it was so hard to get to the point of having a demo, we just like send it out. Fuck, send it out. Can I swear in this podcast?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we're
fine. Of course you can.
Okay, cool.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Can I swear can I on this it? Podcast? Yeah. Where do you think we release this?
Clearly she's a fan, y'all. Clearly she listens to our podcast.
This will be appearing on the Disney Channel.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a fan of Theater of Others, you know, like sometimes I may miss some episodes or miss half an hour of my life. I'm still a fan, okay?
I'm a fan of the people, not just their work, you know.
I am a fan of the work. I named the work like twice just now. And I also listened to some of the Stephen Galtney podcasts, so you know, I am
okay la.
Yeah. I don't know how much it takes to be a fan these days, God.
Okay, so the demo.
So we sent the demo, and for obvious reasons it did not go over well. Because not only did we send the demo, we forgot to send that it had changed drastically and in what ways. In the original proposal, Galatea was the protagonist. And it was during...
It was a feminist piece. It was a feminist piece. It was a feminist work.
It was based off like my own experience in the original proposal.
And you are a what?
I'm a feminist. I'm a female. I'm a woman.
Wait, what are your intersections? Where do you intersect?
The part where there's the vagina.
Okay.
That's a good intersection. I feel like that's the most obvious intersection. Like,
that's the perfect one. That's the perfect like intersection right there. That is the point.
For me personally, that's my intersection.
It's definitely not going on Disney Channel. We're definitely not going on Disney Channel.
Well, you said I could swear, so I thought the demonetized were okay.
You're fine.
Yes,
you're fine.
And this is why we have you in the closet with us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's gonna be a fun, dark little closet we're in.
Yes. The original proposal was a feminist work.
I mean, yes. It's still, to me, the musical fable is still feminist in the sense that it strives for a little bit of equality. It's very controversial. Very controversial. So what did we say about that version that you sent us? So what you guys said was that because it was going off of the myth of Pygmalion and Galatea, the... being a response to that, it would naturally be perceived as a response to the original myth of Pygmalion and Galatea, which commonly was interpreted as a feminist piece. But to have Pygmalion in that be the protagonist would say that...
Which is the man, would say,
all you feminists from the time before, y'all are hacks. That's not true. This is wrong. Y'all are mistaken entirely. I can see
in a nutshell, it was misogynistic.
The musical fable? I mean, in certain aspects, I mean, if you wanted to view it very uncharitably, yes, it would be considered misogynistic. So, why it wasn't, was because of where it developed from. And I can see how you can think of it as misogynistic because it's supposed to be a reflection of the play. To me, when we talk about adaptation, you can adapt things in a way that's kind of divorced from its original. I'm not sure everyone on the podcast agrees with me, but that was my take on it. And where it came from was that basically the person I was writing it for, the person is male identifying. And I felt that the more I worked on the piece, the musical fable, the harder it would be for him to identify himself, to identify himself within the characters of the play. And I was thinking from the point of view of, you know, women have Streetcar Named Desire, women have Rent, women have My Fair Lady even, and all these other shows that kind of shine that light on abusive intimate partner violence and emotional violence or physical violence or otherwise. And like people like that person who I cared about didn't really have that. At the same time, it was a subset of survivor that did exist. So I wanted to broaden the spotlight, not to say that men are the best, men are all men's rights, huzzah, you know, that's not what I wanted to say. What I wanted to say was that emotional violence and gaslighting isn't gendered. It can happen to anyone. And even if you're the male in the relationship, it's okay to admit that you are in danger, that you are also a victim of violence. You're a victim of emotional violence or physical violence. And I wasn't trying to, you know, take the spotlight away from feminist rhetoric. It was more like I was trying to broaden it to include men. Because when I looked up all these statistics and I looked up all these help centers, like even in Singapore, there's AWARE. I'm not sure what it is for other countries. There are many, many helplines and hotlines for women who suffer from, you know, domestic partner violence. But for men, that there aren't really that those resources available. So to me, that was an important thing to highlight because there are female shelters, female-only shelters, but there aren't men-only shelters. And if you're a man and you bring this up, you oftentimes get ridiculed for being weak. And, you know, that was what I wanted to highlight. And that's the difference in musical, the musical version versus the play version. The play version is told from my perspective of being in a relationship like that. And at the same time, being fully aware that, you know, the person that I loved doesn't have that perspective and might find it difficult for himself to see himself as the survivor or the, I don't really want to use the word victim, but survivor in that role, I created the musical fable for him.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
I think what you ended up with serviced that. I think that our response to your rewrite really forced you to go into why you were writing it. You really got into the why, and I think this final version really hits it hard. And it's and I think what's important is to remember that your female experience can translate into a male's understanding and perspective of the world from the female gaze. Because I think that you were able to do that so freaking clearly in this final edit. Like, and it's really uncomfortable. As a male, I'm really, really uncomfortable. And I think that you've really found that je ne sais quoi that happens in art. Where like when you're like because I you're playing with my, especially as an American, you're playing with my need to have that happy ending in the way I want to see it and feel it. And so that's underneath the, so through the whole piece, that's pushing up against me the whole time. And I'm so fucking agitated. It's pushing up against my politics. It's pushing up against my own personal narrative. It's pushing up against my framing of storytelling. Especially, and I think what's really exciting is you do it in this way where we feel like we're in a classic world, a classical space, in a classic way of storytelling, and it's hitting in a way that is the form is true to, you know, you don't push up against it in the way that you're saying, okay, now we're just going to destroy it and make it, you know, and make it this contemporary musical, but you're actually using the structure to force me into what it feels like to one, be an observer of that world, also to be inside of that world, and also to be on both sides of the narrative without. And it's relentless in that way, because there's no apology from either perspective. And so then it gets into this place of like how complex this interrelating between the males and females of this world is. So I think that what you were intending, Rachel, is really clear. And I sent the message to Galtney. I was like, I'm agitated. Agitated.
Theater of agitation.
Theater. I do wonder if, just because everyone may not be familiar with the Pygmalion Galatea story, if you could give us no spoilers, obviously, but just a really brief context for like what the given circumstances are of that myth. I think it's interesting that you've basically written two plays about the same. They're two different plays, completely different plays.
Yeah.
So I'm interested not just in like what about the myth made you interested in writing it this way and writing it this way, but what makes it so interesting to you that you were able to produce two plays about the same myth.
So I feel like that's like multiple layers of questions in that. So I'll go with the first one, which is the background. And in Ovid's Metamorphoses, Pygmalion is a sculptor who sculpts his ideal statue, his ideal woman. And in the original myth, he goes to the festival of Aphrodite, and he prays, and Aphrodite has mercy on him and brings her to life. And that's basically that chunk in Ovid. It's a very simple story that's been adapted for hundreds of years in a million different ways. In terms of what made it interesting for me was the idea that you could craft your ideal partner. The idea that you could shape another living being to something that you could love, that was made for you, that was purpose-built for your pleasure, your entertainment, your lust, your love. And that, to me, was kind of what a gaslighting relationship looked like. How the gaslighter in that relationship would basically alter their partner's perception of reality and shape the way they behave through manipulation and manipulative behavior. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like people who gaslight, like my ex, that particular ex that I'm talking about, wasn't aware. I don't think he was actively aware of what he was doing, but he was doing it almost unconsciously, because he knew from past behavior that this thing would equal to this result. This me doing this to you equals to you behaving in this way. And it's not just in romantic partnerships. I noticed that a lot in parenting as well. So one example might be like, if I, the parent, tell you to do something and then it backfires, I can just say, oh, I never told you to do that. Or you misunderstood what I said. Basically making someone question the reality of things so that you can't quite see what's in front of you, because you're not sure anymore and you start to doubt yourself. So
especially when you have love and trust in the mix as well.
Yes, Rachel. Exactly.
You know, if I'm a kid or a partner and I love you and I'm giving you my heart and my trust and you're gaslighting me, that's traumatic.
Mm-hmm. it does build a lot of like trauma. I took a long time to get over that trauma. And it was hard for me to recognize whether or not someone was gaslighting me. At the same time, like, not having that vocabulary to talk about my experience was very hard. It's hard to process what you don't have words for. And I don't know in the US if like this is very common vernacular. Like, is gaslighting a thing that people use very often?
Donald Trump. Donald
Gaslights.
Trump. That's what
the king of gaslighting.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. To me, in my circle of the world, you know, growing up in Malaysia, coming to Singapore, it's not very commonly used. That word is not commonly used. And I don't think people want you to know this word, even. It's the power of words, right? Because if you know it, then you can kind of look out for when it's happening to you.
Right.
Well, the
reference of gaslighting it also comes from an American film. So culturally, it wouldn't be something that in Malaysia would be a part of the common vernacular. You know what I mean? It's like, there is no gas. What are you talking about? There is no gas. But I smell gas. But there is no gas. You don't smell gas.
No, don't really use the oil lamps anymore. Don't really. Yeah.
Oh, there is no gas. There is no gas.
There is no gas. There is no gas.
We didn't pay the gas bill. There is no gas.
Is that a dimmer? Is that Google Home? Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yep.
What was it like working with Stephen Gutney as your dramaturg?
It was a lot of butting heads, right, Stephen? Like,
It's true.
It's a lot of butting heads. We were like so chill. And then we were like butting heads, like over Zoom. We were like, "Well, I don't think blah blah. I don't think blah blah blah." And then we were butting heads over email. And then I was like, "Oh, Steven's just gonna hate me. He hates me. He hates my
don't
team.
Don't hate you."
Was I the most difficult person to deal with in terms of dramaturgy?
Well, it's interesting when.
I hear the hesitation.
No. I think it's interesting when you are talking about a piece of work and you just disagree about it, you know, and you disagree about like what it's doing. Like, I think that is where our disagreement was. It's like, I thought that first play was doing a certain thing and you thought that play was doing something else. So it's not just a disagreement on, you know, on what it makes us feel. It's a disagreement on what it's actively, you know, happening. And, you know, at some point, yeah, we had a lot of very long email exchanges and we had a long Zoom talk. And, you know, we just reached the point where I think we had both kind of said everything that we thought about play. And you can't, you know. If you just disagree on what it's doing, then that is kind of an impasse. But then on the second piece, I think it was an entirely different, you know, experience. Like, I think we agreed on what the second piece was doing. As soon as you sent that second piece, I was like, yep, here we go. This is doing what we want this piece to be doing. So yeah, I feel like we had two different collaborative processes, which was interesting.
Yeah. So in like internally, we refer to like both pieces as Galatea MF Musical Fable and Galatea TOO Theatre of Others. So to avoid confusion in terms of like referring to editing and casts, because like for the Musical Fable version, there's two people, which was intentional, like trying to boil down the tension, and then Galatea, the theatrical podcast version, has like a billion people. We have like eight characters, I think. Yeah. Like eight people. It's like world building.
Okay, so my next question is, Rachel, next question is, what would you change? If you could like go back to yourself right now, from what you've learned, what would you change? What would you do differently?
I definitely would have, you know, for the sake of not having two different babies and have them separated at birth to two different places, I would have wanted to send over a draft of the script earlier on. And I also kind of wish that I had done more musical training prior to starting this and had a clearer understanding of what it took to write a musical. I wish those things were true. And yeah, but mostly I do wish that we had come to Theatre of Others with kind of like the draft that we were going to be recording before actually doing like recording. And then we wouldn't have two beautiful babies who are now separated at birth. Like twins from the same parents, almost raised by different families.
So I have a question about the language. There's something that we haven't even spoken about, the language itself. Mm. There's some very specific language that I'm very excited about. Very excited about. Oh. Can you talk about the language?
The language of the Galatea, the theatrical piece, right? The Malay. Yeah, are you talking about the Malay? Like the Malay? And
yeah,
the...
definitely.
Oh, yeah. So the setting of Galatea is in an alternate history where the Greeks in real life did come to Peninsula Malaya at the time. And so this is...
Really?
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, I think hopefully Adam is going to Google this and then put it up there.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Right. Check out the show notes, folks, for the historical lesson that I will be looking for.
Thanks, Adam. Woo! Yes. So, yeah, it's on a map and everything. So this explores, you know, like that alternate history where the Greeks kind of left their culture behind, left their gods, left some of their music. So the Malay is very peranakan. I'm from Malaysia, and I like to write things in, you know, my vernacular and write things for countries that are not, you know, the dominant media industries like the US and UK. So I wanted to write it from like that perspective. So I threw in Malay and I hope it made it across in a way that was understandable and translatable and transcending to like audiences regardless of where they're from. So the Malay, I just really liked the playfulness of the Malay language. The Malay language, like the sound of it, it's very, what's the word for it? I want to say kampung, but there's a translation in English.
Yeah,
I know
kampung.
It. Village.
Yeah, kampung.
Village.
Yeah, well, the village.
Yeah, it's very
kampung.
Rural. Yeah, I just like
in the hood.
In the hood. Yeah.
Right. It's the people.
Yeah. Because back then, even the Chinese people spoke Malay. Like, if you were from India, from China, from anywhere, you spoke Malay because Malay was the lingua franca. The thing that connected everyone. And if you had like Peranakan background, which meant you were Chinese living as Malay, you would also speak Malay. So I thought it would be nice to include some of my culture in a story like this. Especially if I wrote it, fabulous. I mean like who else is going to include it?
Exactly. So I think that goes into my next question is how has this project influenced or inspired your next work?
I like to think that this project has helped me identify for myself and solidify a little bit more the kind of writer that I am, the kind of work that I enjoy doing. So I haven't written like a billion things. So I have like a small portfolio of things that I've worked on, it, and every single one of them, I notice a pattern of like including my local vernacular, my language, the sounds of the people here. And I've noticed that I like to talk about things that aren't really spoken about in theater. And I think I've come to recognize that my viewpoint is just as valid. because it used to be a case of growing up and watching all these films and TV that came from the US and came from the UK and came from every other country.
I remember that, Rachel. Mm-hmm. I remember that, Rachel.
Yeah, that Rachel, went to LaSalle with a very clear and very wrong idea of what acting and like literature and plays were supposed to look like. And I'm finding now, like, given the whole pandemic and the ability to explore my own writing, I'm finding a little bit of like, ah, yeah, fuck it, ah, just write whatever I want to write. And writing from a point of view that I have and knowing that's okay, you know? In fact, that's even welcome, because why the fuck shouldn't it be?
Yeah. I remember, I remember so specifically.
Baby Rachel.
So specifically when you found, the freedom in your Malay voice. It actually goes down in history as one of the most definable moments of when the clown is revealed, and it happened in Bali. Do you remember this?
I do remember this.
Do you remember this? Do you remember this moment in Bali?
I remember.
When it was like, one more time, boy, boy, hey, boy, boy, you, boy. One more, one more. Do you remember?
Yes, yes. The Chinese lady who is speaking.
Yes!
Yes, I remember that. So,
yes!
Booty took us all on a retreat to Bali where we had a spiritual actors training and we connected with the spirits around us and with ourselves. And that's when I had this like real breakthrough of, you know what? I don't have to be like super self-colonialized Rachel. I can totally be like Auntie Rachel. Hey, you getting married or not? You want to get married? You want to get married? You got money or not? You got no money, then I'm sorry, Sorry, you cannot marry, okay? What are you going to do yourself if you don't get married? Yeah.
So, I remember so vividly. So it was just like, it was Taksu. It was like, oh, I could sit with this woman all day.
She would make you get married.
This character all day. I know. Everybody, everybody in the room would be married. Yeah, exactly. And I would be okay with it.
You don't talk about remembering it. I remember the image that you gave me. I don't even know if you still have it, but I remember the image.
Of course I do. It's still in you, baby. It's amazing.
Always was in me. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think... Oh my goodness! You might have to come back and talk with us again, or send us another play for next season.
Yeah, exactly.
Next season, there's going to be a season two.
Is there a season two? Oh my goodness! Wow, exciting!
Season two, renewed.
Wow, you got renewed! Oh my goodness! Celebration.
Well, Adam, why don't you give some information on where we go from here?
Well, Rachel's play Galatea comes out this Monday, 13th of September, and you'll find it all on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now. It'll just automatically come into your feed if you subscribe. That's right. You don't want to miss these. We're coming out 2 episodes every single week. We have the interview coming out today and then Rachel's play coming out on Monday, and it's great. It really is great. As you've heard us discuss today, It does. It keeps you tense. It keeps you really kind of agitated throughout the entire process, which is fascinating. And it's something that you don't think about when you're reading or watching a play. Like, you don't want to just kind of like brush it away. You don't want to just dismiss it. You want it to live inside of you. And this one does. This one really kind of does.
It hits you. It got me.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it, but it got me. Exactly. It got me.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, make sure to check out Rachel's play Galatea coming out this Monday. We'll have another interview with another playwright next week. You want to see this. This is going on for all of the month of September and a little bit into October as well. We're really excited about this work. They just keep getting better and better every single time, from when we saw the proposal to when we read them to when we talk with the playwright to then when we finally get to listen to them. It's just really cool work that we're really proud of.
So everyone, listen to the podcast next week or in the next couple of days. Adam, it's so good to see you.
It's always great to see you, Booty. And Steven, it's lovely seeing you Steven, so often now.
It's so good to see all three of you. The space is so cramped in the closet. Yeah.
Rachel, oh my God, I'm so happy to be reunited with you. It's amazing.
Very happy to be reunited with everyone.
Well, everyone, we're going to talk to you soon. And listen to Rachel's play. It's pretty fucking fabulous.
Yeah.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Theater Brothers podcast. Make sure to visit our website, theaterbrothers.org, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. A special thank you to Purple Planet for the music you've heard. The Theater Brothers creates a shared community of artists and audiences for the purposes of exploring the most profound issues of our lives and times. We believe the play watches the audience. The audience is necessary, and they are witness to what happens. And you get to be witness to us making that happen. The purpose of this podcast is to open up our process and let you in. We're peeling back the curtain, so to speak, and encouraging you to follow along, to ponder, prod, and question, to join us and criticize us if need be. Being a witness is no passive task and requires much from you. Are you up for the journey? Be sure to tune in next week for our next journey.